PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
Hello, you golfing legends, and welcome back to another episode of the original Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and joining me this week from Tour Edge is Mr. John Claffey and Mr. Matt Neely. Welcome back, gents.
Hey, how's it going? Good to be on again. Been way too long.
Yeah, I was just thinking that myself. It's such an epic background there. You know, it's good to have you on to talk about that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, great to see you again, Dan.
It's been a good year. What's going on up there at HQ? Everything going well this year? Nice and smooth?
Oh, very little actually. No, we've got a ton going on. We've really put a lot of effort into this launch, and you know, obviously into our entire line. But we have a new president, Mr. Tim Clark, came to us after running Wilson for 25 years. So David Glott, our new CEO, he was president before. He is now ascended to the chief executive officer role. He brought on Tim. We've got some more new additions coming, and new website, brand new exotics. We extended 723 life cycle from 12 months to 18 months. So it's been quite a while since we've had some ultra premium tour preferred stuff to talk about. And we actually, in that process, we actually switched the launch timing. So it used to be that we would launch the new hot launch in the fall, and then we would launch exotics in spring. And we switched that. So now we're first instead of last, which has been a lot of fun for us to get out there and kind of have our share of voice right now and getting everybody buzzing about the new 725 stuff.
It's really interesting timing. I believe it's 20 years of exotics this year, which you're sort of benchmarking with this release. That's got to be a huge part of the conversation over there. Is how do you set the tone for the next decade of exotics, right?
Yeah, the exotics CB, which is now referred to as the CB1, came out in 2005. And that's when we really turned the golf world on its head and started paying attention to us, because we had all these players playing our fairways and hybrids on the big tour. Some of the top players in the world, including the number one at the time, Ryder Cups, all sorts of big stuff for no money whatsoever. It was just that we had a better club. And that's kind of changed the direction of Tour Edge forever. And to be at 20 years now is kind of mind blowing.
Yeah. Crazy.
Well, you know, listen, I get the thrill or benefit of watching from the sidelines, just like a lot of golfers do, seeing the changes that go on in the industry. Companies either re-identifying themselves or sort of stabilizing themselves in a lot of ways. And to me, it's, we got a new president. We got a lot of new activity going on over there. And is the goal here to really set the tone of what Tour Edge and exotics can be overall? Is that the feeling around the office, or is this just good positive moves to improve?
It's both. I mean, I would say that this is definitely our best foot forward that we could possibly have. Tim is a leader. He's been through this before. And we had record sales during the pandemic, just, you know, mind-blowing numbers from anything we had ever seen before. And when that party started dying a little bit, you know, it was harder to look around and pick up right where we left off. So we decided that we needed to make some changes, and we did. And so far there's just a brand new energy here and a whole new way of looking at our business. And it's, I think it's exciting. Everybody here, everybody involved with the company, all of our partners. It's a great time to be at Tour Edge.
Yeah, it's been a cool vibe the last 2 months. You know, I definitely feels like a big change, but a really good change. And I don't know, to answer your question a little bit, I don't think there's a full overhaul of anything we're doing. I think it's just kind of some tweaking and, you know, making the right product in the right places at the right price points across our whole line, exotics and hot launch. But it really all starts here, so with the exotic stuff.
Yeah, I think... I've always got the sense that you guys are very conscious on price and functionality and what you provide. Certainly, whether you go super high end with exotics, or are you trying to, I guess, peel back some of the layers to make it really affordable and things like Hot Launch. I've always appreciated that because it's different segments to support every type of golfer, and, you know, packing as much technology into each one that you possibly can without, you know, costing the golfer more of that window shopping vibe rather than let's get in this club and have a lot of fun with it. I do have a secondary question to this, and this is something I've always wondered. Maybe you guys could give me a better sense of it. I know there's an inherent desire from a lot of the companies to be within a very small window, location-wise. And you guys operating up in Chicago, I feel like you sort of get to set your own tone to a lot of things. Do you feel like that exists in a way? And if you do, do you see that as a benefit to be more unique, or is it just a challenge?
You know, as you mentioned, we take pride in the fact that I believe we personally that we service the entire spectrum of golfers out there better than anybody else, from your beginner all the way to the pro. Now, you know, a lot of people try to pigeonhole us as a brand for older players, you know, and the Champions Tour, you know, maybe didn't help that, but it, you know, that was the most cost efficient way to go out on a tour where contracts don't run everything, you know, and guys are stuck in 14 club deals, where we could go out there and go head to head up against the big boys and prove our mettle and get, you know, over 50 players choosing to play our driver. None of them paid, you know, just get a ton of a play out there in every category. So I think that's still our battle, is to win over the younger golfer. And it's not like we're, you know, concentrating on just forged stuff. We concentrate on what makes this game the easiest to play. And that's an important thing for a manufacturer to have their focus on in our sport, because it's such a difficult game.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, being here in the Midwest, I think the values of Tourage and what we do, especially with product at a pretty competitive price point, I think really reflects our Midwest attitude and Midwest roots. It does provide some challenges when we start getting sample product in November, December, and January, because we can't just walk right outside, do our 70-degree driving range and hit it. But we have an awesome facility upstairs. We've got robots. And we usually try to take one or two little small trips down south each year, whether it's a sales meeting or whatever it might be, where we can kind of hit some of our first samples. So, you know, that doesn't quite answer your question there, but that is, as far as being in the Midwest, that's probably one of our bigger challenges, especially as somebody who wants to, as soon as we get something, I want to go hit it outside. So
certainly the most relatable of things. Yeah. That's for sure. Being in Ohio.
We are lucky to have a lot of driving ranges that have outdoor, indoor heated facilities where you can actually hit outside and see the ball, but it still is not quite the same, especially when there's a foot of snow on the ground. So although we've been lucky the last 3 years to have like almost no snow, so I don't know what's going on with all that. But
yeah, seasonality is a little different challenge, but we've got a ton of golfers in Chicago. We've got amazing golf courses here. So we're proud to be here and represent the Midwest.
For sure.
Yeah, you made an interesting point about there's a stigma to an older generation. And I look at it a little bit differently. I think once they get on the senior tour, the opportunity to be their own version of themselves. And respectfully, I've played with a number of advanced age gentlemen out there, and they're very particular about what they put in the bag, and whether that's something that's been there a long time or, you know, shifting to something new, there has to be a very good reason, and they're not going to be sold on it until the results are in what they see when they hit it. So, you know, whether there's a stigma there, I think there should be also a perspective that there's a pretty big challenge in getting it in the hands of, you know, people who are older than, let's say, 30 or 40, because we are more particular. So pay closer attention to that, because they might give you an idea that, you know, maybe this club is worth hitting because they're going to hit it. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. And every younger player out there seems to think that they should be playing what's on the big tour. We, by picking Champions, we were able to get C stuff in play and E stuff in play, you know, because the swing speed differential. And so I think it's a little bit more relatable to, you know, the majority of golfers. I think that's what Tour Edge is across the board, is that we're a more relatable company to what you actually need in your bag, despite what your brain may be telling you.
Well, let's break down 725 a little bit. There's some big stuff going on, and what is the primary focus right now? What's the big storyline right out of the gate from a new release for you?
Well, 10K, we got into that whole deal. Matt can really tell you about what 10K is. Some people will be happy to know. I think you're one of them, Dan. Ridgeback is still on the product as far as Ridgeback 360, but the spine through the crown is gone. We've got a super clean matte look. And speaking of Matt, tell them what 10K is all about, our version.
Yeah, so 10K obviously been a pretty big buzzword in golf for the last, 2 years, 3 years, 1 year, whatever it's been. Lots of chatter about it. But, we obviously, we have designed product in the past that has gotten incredibly close to 10K, but we weren't really trying to. So like our E723 driver was within a stone's throw of 10K. So with that in mind, and being, I think, great from a marketing standpoint, but as well as a performance standpoint to really get us to that envelope, that was kind of one of the big focuses with E725 in comparison to E723. So we had to enlarge our head shape a little bit. We had to give a little bit more room out on that perimeter, because basically to get to that really high MOI, we're basically trying to pull as much weight away from the center of gravity. So the further away from the center of gravity that the weight is, the higher we can get the MOI. Now, in MOI, we typically in golf have only been talking about MOI in one direction. That's where we have a USGA limit of 5,900. And that's kind of the resistance to twisting in the heel toe direction. That's kind of what we've talked about for MOI for the last, since the advent of square drivers, where the USGA kind of had to go and set that limit, I think, in 2006. But with 10K, we're also talking about the MOI in the up and down direction. So, we're kind of taking this from a full face forgiveness standpoint. When we talked about MOI, we were kind of only talking about the heel and toe forgiveness. Now we're talking about it kind of holistically as, adding in the up and down forgiveness. So, of course, the higher MOI, the more resistance to twisting, that's going to increase ball speed on off-center hits. And that's really what we're talking about with high MOI. We're just trying to preserve as much ball speed and energy as we can on those off-center hits. So that was kind of one of the big challenges and the big reason why we're trying to get to that 10,000 MOI number. Now, it is just a number. It's great for marketing, but it is very important. Basically, the higher, and we've seen it in our testing, we run full face tests against all the competitors, against our stuff, and we just see a lower decrease in ball speed as we go across the face, the higher our total combined MOI is. So it's been really helpful from a forgiveness standpoint. And I think out in the field already, we're already hearing a lot of really good feedback as far as our forgiveness on the product. And so that's just been huge. Really, really good.
What's it like challenging those limits? I mean, we've seen, you mentioned heel to toe and then talked about a more vertical conversation. What is it like pulling back the layers year over year and figuring out that, when you're looking at A plus B equals C, but then you realize A plus B equals C minus D type of thing. Like, there's so much more to it as you've slowly figured it out. Where's the challenge lie? What's too much in that case?
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, it is a big challenge because every lever we pull in one direction may have an adverse effect somewhere else. So in the past, our big challenge as we increase MOI a lot has been getting too much spin. And so we have to be really cognizant of where we put our center of gravity location in combination with that super high MOI. Because in the past, kind of to get to really high MOI, we'd have to pull the center of gravity really, really far back. And then you just have to be really careful with how high or low it gets. Because, if it just ends up a tad too high or a tad too low, that's where those super high MOI clubs just end up being spin monsters. The ones from the past were just, they would spin a ton. And while they may go very, very straight, they just weren't going very far. So that's kind of the biggest challenge as we try to really pull on that MOI lever to get us there. But we kind of just found through testing just the exact right spot. So, we, during our testing process, we're bringing in 5, 6, 7 different models that are all basically the same model, just with slight tweaks in either weight location, ribbing location, face design, whatever it may be. So it ends up being, you know, we have 3, 4, 5, 6 different levers we're kind of pulling all at the same time. And we really have to narrow in on which one of those options is the one that's going to get us exactly where we need to be. Now, the robot and our kind of internal player testing has just been huge in that, because we really kind of have great baselines. Like, we know that when we hit something on the robot and it does this, we know that's a good thing or a bad thing. And that gives us a great piece of feedback, like, okay, for our next revision, for our round 2 samples, for our round 3 samples, this is what we need to do to get the product exactly where we need to go. Now, that was also one of the awesome benefits of us having, I guess, an extra 6 months. It's one of the benefits and curses is that, you know, the product's really close and it's ready to go, but it's like, all right, well, we've got 6 months left, so let's make it better, which is really cool from an engineering standpoint, but also, like, you know, we're like, okay, well, we're ready, but now what else can we do? And that's one of the cool aspects of having that extra time. We were really able to get almost a full tour product cycle with the, so, you know, I'm not sure how many of the listeners know this, but we basically kind of launched our 725 product out on tour in January as C Proto and E Proto. And we just kept it super blank, super clean. We put almost no branding on the product, but it gave us a great opportunity to get the product out on tour and do some real life testing, find out what the guys like, what they didn't. You know, at that point, we weren't sure if we were going to get rid of the Ridgeback or not. But pretty much as soon as the guys saw the first parts that didn't have a big ridge going down the center, they were like, wow, this looks really good. You know, so now we still are calling out Ridgeback as a tech because we kind of do it a little bit under the hood towards the front of the face. That was kind of one of my big battles with marketing. I've wanted to get rid of the ridge for a little while because we found that it works. It really does a lot, but we found other ways to do it. But from a marketing standpoint, visible tech is also a really, really good thing. But that ridge was just adding an extra 3-4 grams really high, which kind of was pulling our center of gravity up. And that was one of the, you know, kind of referring back to our levers. That was one of the things we wanted to change. We wanted to get the center of gravity a little bit lower, and getting rid of that ridge on the crown was really helpful to do that.
Well, and so, now it's cascaded down to hot launch.
Yep. So yep.
It's a perfect technology for that segment. And yeah, when we brought out the protos to tour, it's not like we were even attempting to get guys in play. We really just wanted feedback, but we got almost immediately got 8 guys in play with driver. We had over 16 different players put in the fairways and hybrids. So it was our number one played driver on the year. It was our number one played fairway on the year. So just kind of blew us away with, you know, these clubs going right into play and helping guys make a living out there. So it was a really cool experience because it was the first time ever that we brought a product out as a prototype to the tour without launching it first. So it was a different experience for us for sure.
You mentioned Ridgeback, and I think that's such an interesting point to be made that you didn't want to get rid of it, but you refined it. Now, I've seen a fair bit of this lately in the industry where companies have these great ideas, but then they find ways to improve on those ideas and while maintaining the same sort of concept that existed to support it. So, you know, I think one of the biggest challenges, I'm a believer in technology. I love it when you guys create and come up with these unique ways to do it, especially when it's different from everyone else. I'm a huge fan of that. What I don't love is when people come back and say, oh, they got rid of that, so clearly it didn't do much. But then you really take a look and you're like, no, they made it better. And they found ways to improve on that. That's got to be a really hard thing, especially on the marketing side. I would assume on the back end, when you're designing and creating, you don't have to worry so much about carrying on that sort of that style, maybe a little bit, but not as much. Whereas the marketing side, you've been selling the story for a year plus. It's like, all right, now I just got to pretend like it didn't happen. Like, where's the challenge there?
That's a huge challenge. And, you know, especially, you know, being an engineer, like, if I could just make a golf club that was completely blank and didn't have any graphics or cosmetics on it, but it had all the performance and everything I wanted in it, that would be great. But, you know, I'll be honest, my least favorite part of the job is trying to help make the club look pretty. It's very important to do. But, you know, if I could just give you all the technology and like a little blank model, you know, that's what I'm initially doing. And that's what we internally are doing in the CAD. We're kind of going at it from the most simple standpoint to achieve the goals that we have. And so those are fine-tuned tweaks. But throughout that way, we just have to work very closely with marketing because we can make an incredible product, but if it doesn't have features that we can market and advertise, then that also becomes a challenge as well.
So. Yeah, no, it was, I mean, it's by no means was Ridgeback's the spine a flop. It was yeah. quite successful, set us apart in the marketplace, showed people that may think that we're just followers that we're, you know, we can lead with a new idea. Yeah, I mean, that's why we brought it to Hot Launch, because it, a lot of people love it. And some people are upset that it's not on the new 725 stuff. It's a, you know, they used it as an alignment aid, and you know, they liked it. But yeah, things change. That's what happens in everything in life, but especially in golf clubs.
Yeah. Like, again, I don't think the intent is a full departure. It's just, it's really funny that knee jerk reaction when the first thing comes out and they say, oh, this naming convention. Oh, it's clearly just marketing hype. And then you look down and like, well, here's what it looks like when we take it out. And you're like, I don't want that. So it's pretty good. I want to ask you about the tour testing. I think that's really interesting. But from a design standpoint, when you really get to that like January point where you're putting it in play, does it go from this sort of like really broad attempt, try and focus on these broad features, and then you get it on tour and then you really start to tighten those adjustments that you're making? Is that what's going on there?
So, you know, it kind of depends on our launch cycle and when that's coming. So this time, usually when we go to tour, we're usually, you know, with our old launch cycle, we were usually going in October and not really bringing finished product out, kind of like, you know, here's something that you are not allowed to put in the bag. This is not on the USG list. We are just trying to get your feedback and, you know, where it's at. What do you think? How does it sound? How does it feel? Can you get where you need from a ball speed standpoint? Can you get where you need from launch and spin? We'll usually have different face designs, different face materials, things like that. We kind of had that. We were able to do the same thing this year, but we were already a little further down the design track this year, just because we were kind of prepared to launch the product at normal launch timing. So we kind of more or less had finished product, but we did have a couple different designs within that, whether that was slightly different face materials, slightly different face designs. So they were very minor tweaks that we were kind of able to take advantage of, you know, from the player feedback, but it was really easy, you know, and we had three different face designs at that point when we just came to the forefront immediately as being the best, which is really great for us. You know, it doesn't always work quite that well, you know, and so that was just really a nice test and something that made our life really easy. And so, you know, it kind of depends at where the product is in the life cycle of if it's going to be big tweaks, if we're just showing a true prototype, or if these are going to be kind of behind the scene tweaks like the guys won't even notice. So,
yeah, Dave and Matt have done a great job at bringing all new tech into the 725. The sliding track from 723 was replaced with weight ports that was much easier to use and even more effective. As far as, you know, your plus minus that you're going to get in the adjustability. Front, we still have the front and back weighting system, but they made these little weight caves and ports back here. So they were able to go to the players and say, hey, brand new stuff here, brand new tech. Same thing with Diamond Face. I think you even had some product at first that had the old Diamond Face and the new Diamond Face. Yep. You were able to see the difference. You can show them because now it's called 3D Diamond Face now instead of Diamond Face VFT. 3D Diamond Face is because we now have protruding diamonds that actually have some
probably a little tough to see on the camera here. So this is the new Diamond Face. So you can tell they actually kind of look like little pyramids. So here's the old one. They were kind of just flat little diamonds or diamonds or rhombuses, whatever you want to call them. They're maybe not officially diamonds. Some of them are maybe more rhombi like, but that rhombus face didn't sound quite as good. I tried for that, but that's why I'm an engineer. So we found
Matt, I'm going to tell you right now, my wife will be such a fan of this show. As a geometry teacher, she would be 100% behind rhombus, team rhombus. So
I don't know, maybe we'll take that one back to the drawing board. We might have to edit that one out of the podcast, because who knows, maybe the next product will have rhombus face.
That's so funny.
Rhombi face.
Yeah.
we kind of you know, ultimately kind of just what you're talking about with Ridgeback, in that we're not just ditching it or getting rid of it. We've just kind of found a different way to achieve the same goal. Same with Diamond Face. At this point, I guess we're on our like fourth or fifth iteration of Diamond Face. And we try lots of other different face designs as we go throughout the process. But we have kind of found the Diamond Face as being the best way for us to really distribute the load across the entire face, while also being able to take a lot of weight out of the face. And so that was kind of our big goal of going from our regular VFT Diamond Face with flat diamonds to these, you know, I guess more three-dimensional pyramids, in that we were able to take out another 4 grams from the face. And again, that's like, you know, when we're talking about trying to get to this mythical 10K number, that's every gram that we can pull from certain areas and locate exactly where we need it to is really important. So getting that extra 3 or 4 grams from the face, another 3 or 4 grams from the Ridgeback, you know, right there, we're talking 7-8 grams that we have, you know, free reign to do what we want with them. And, you know, whether that's locating them more towards the perimeter, lower, higher, whatever it might be. So we can kind of just sit there in the CAD and, you know, run a different bunch of different simulations on where we're going to end up if we locate the weight here, if we put it here, if we put it somewhere else. So, you know, anything we can do to save weight. And then, of course, throughout that, we can't lose ball speed. So running through all of our testing and making sure that with this new design where we save weight, are we still going to be able to pass durability? Of course, that's important. And then are we going to be able to have the same ball speeds across the entire face? So, you know, we were able to accomplish that. We had some great testing, exactly, just out on tour. You know, we brought out both heads, ones with old Diamond Face, ones with new. And again, the new Diamond Face ones were just better because that's another thing too. We can spend all day designing this 3D Diamond Face. We could have all the theoretical options that we think it works really well. We could have all the marketing ready to roll, but ultimately if we get it out there and it doesn't perform, like, we're not going to use it. So that's always one of the biggest things, you know, and you know, from an engineering and performance standpoint, like, the product just has to perform. So we're not going to put anything on it that makes the product worse. So,
yeah, I wanted to bring up C real quick, Dan, too. The C driver, you know, a little smaller, more compact head, 445cc. You know, it's got it's one of the most adjustable drivers in the business with the weight ports back here. You got three ports back here, and you got the front weight that you can switch back and forth for MOI manipulation. But, you know, speaking to that younger player who may not be giving us a look because they're in the higher swing speed category, this is our low spin driver, and it is very low spin, and it is a player preferred design. So this was the majority of what was in play on Champions Tour. 10K made some bags. But you want to talk about the club that really got the most buzz out there, and you're talking about the C725 fairway, 90 grams of tungsten, completely titanium, a low spin monster, super deep face. Now you got your super clean matte finish crown. It just wanted to bring this up as if you're one of those guys that's been doubting us or gals that's been doubting us as far as your, you know, 110 plus mile per hour swing, we got you covered. Yeah.
I wanted to take a chance before we even shift onto fairways, just really quickly. Can you highlight the numerous things that are different between the E series and the C series drivers? Just so folks listening, you know, I know there's a stigma around 10K, both in the positive and negative. A lot of guys are looking for that more workable, more compact head with a lower spin design. That sounds like that's what C is going to deliver for them.
Yeah, for sure. So the C is, as John already mentioned, so it's 445cc, so not quite at that USGA 460cc limit. So it's a little bit more, you know, you look at the two next to each other, it's pretty easy to tell the difference. It's got a little bit deeper face. We've got the full adjustability range. So the driver ships with a 15 gram weight in the front and a 5 gram weight in the back. So we're basically shipping it in the low spin setting. The more weight that you have forward, the lower spin that it is. Those weights, of course, can flip. So you can put the 15 gram weight in the back and the 5 gram weight up front. And what we found in our testing on the robot is around 300 to 400 RPM of spin increase. So we kind of started at that super low spin setting because the guy that picks up the C driver is probably in that world. But it's really easy to just swap the weights and just get an extra 300, 400 RPM of spin. And usually around a degree of launch is about what we see. So that's kind of the deal with the C driver.
I mean, now, it's still what?
Yeah, so that's
near 9K.
We're like a little
on there, but it's really high in Hawaii for, you know, that size club head.
Yeah, still, and that's was the one, you know, that was like the, when we launched this product to our sales reps, that was like the very first question we had was like, well, what about the C? Where does that one fall? Is the C like a really hard to hit driver? And we, of course, measure everybody's stuff. And the C driver, as far as in the players category goes, is still like pretty darn forgiving. You know, we're still pushing 5,000 MOI on the heel to toe. And then, you know, whatever, 3,800, 3,900, we're very close to that 9,000 number. And again, you know, whether 8,000, 9,000, 10,000 makes it a great product, you know, but as far as just comparing it, it is still very high. But then, yes, so then in the E driver, we just have the weight in the back. It's an 18 gram weight in the back. Adjustable heel to toe, nothing in the front. So it's nice and clean there in the front. And this is, of course, our big head. So it's at the full USGA bubble, I guess, you know, because there is a limit on heel to toe, front to back, all of that kind of fills the maximum envelope. So when you look down at it, it's very confident, inspiring, a little bit lower profile than the C driver, kind of just to encourage that extra launch and spin. And in the E driver, we are typically seeing around 300 or 400 RPM increase from that C driver with the weight in the back. So, you know, basically what we see in our testing is about a 1000 RPM spin delta from the C driver in the low setting to the E driver with, you know, 18 grams of weight in the back, you know, and those are all ballparks. Your mileage may vary. You know, what we see on the robot doesn't always correlate exactly with what we see in player testing. It really depends on a person's swing, their path, their angle, all that stuff. But again, that's, you know, just to speak in approximate terms. So if you need help, you know, just obliterating your launch and spin, keeping it really low, if you need that low spin monster, that's your C driver with the weight in the front. If you need a little bit of help, you want a little bit more forgiveness, you want to get the ball in the air, that's your E driver.
Well, we have weights that you can buy individually to get, you know, to the fastest possible swing in the universe could be low spin with the right weight adjustment that we do sell.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm still pretty sure that C stands for Canada, and so I really appreciate you guys looking out for me on that one. But walk me through the fairway woods. You got me all primed from this crazy titanium low spin monster, and I need to hear about it. Just I assume there's an E and a C, and the C just sounds insane.
Yeah, so there is an E and a C. We'll start with the C. So 3D Diamond Face goes across the whole line. So that goes from drivers, fairways, hybrids, and our irons as well. So we've got that 3D Diamond Face in there. Again, it worked really well in our testing for drivers, so we thought it just makes a lot of sense to bring it on down through the whole lineup. Now, this is our third iteration of kind of this titanium body fairway wood, kind of with the big heavy tungsten weight. We kind of debuted it with C722. We found with C722, it was a really good performer if you had the swing speed to get it up in the air. It was almost too low spin, almost too low launch. So we made some tweaks in the design when we went to C723. So we kind of made it a little bit more friendly. We had way more success out on tour. Same within retail. We also brought front to back weighting to that product. So you had a little bit more flexibility to kind of achieve that really low launch or something a little bit more in the middle. Then with C725, we kind of found the sweet spot through our testing of exactly where we needed it to be. We're kind of, you know, we found the Goldilocks CG position to kind of achieve like a really nice low spin with the weight forward, but a really nice kind of mid spin when you swap the weights. We adjusted the head shape a little bit. And probably the biggest change is that instead of with C723, we basically made the whole body out of the same titanium. So the body was the same as the face. That limited us just a tiny bit on what we could do from a face thickness standpoint. With this year, we opted to go to a face insert on the fairway. So this one doesn't have the face insert in there, but this allowed us to use a higher... a titanium with a higher tensile strength. So I don't think we don't really talk about the materials that we use specifically because they are kind of proprietary, but we are always trying out new materials. And so this gave us a chance to use something a little bit thinner to get that CT COR a little bit higher. And yeah, I think what we found is that this C is a really, really good fairway. And again, that was not to say it was a surprise. We knew it was a really good fairway, but when we got it out on tour, it kind of immediately became the big winner out there. You know, that was the one that guys who aren't Torrid staffers were asking us, do you have a 3-wood? Do you have a 5-wood?
Showing up at the bags on the range going, hey, need to talk to you guys about the,
Well, I mean, it's pretty clear that you're excited about it, John, because we didn't even get through drivers and you're already reaching for it. So I'm sure you got a couple good stories to tell. What is it about the fairway that's really standing out for you?
Yeah, we're still getting guys put in the bag. Scotty McCarron just had his best finish of the year, top five last week, and he put it in play for the first time. I think the biggest thing is they're amazed at that it's the launch. I think it's exactly the flight of the ball, because it's low spin, but it's also getting the airborne pretty easily. So, you know, it's taking cues from 723 with that 90 grams and, you know, the tungsten plug and the 15 gram weight and everything else. But I think also the sound has been the real winner.
Sound's been really good. We've also found the turf interaction on it's really good. For these guys, 3-woods are still a pretty important club for them to be able to hit off the fairway. Whereas I think out on the main tour, you're kind of seeing 3-woods as basically being like a backup tee club. They, you know, that's why 5-woods, 7-woods, even 9-woods out on tour are becoming a little bit more popular, because, you know, they don't have a 3-wood that they can hit off the ground. It's basically like their second driver. You know, if they don't need to hit it 350 and they only need to hit it 320, they use their 3-wood. Now, our guys on the Champions Tour, there's guys that move it out there for sure, but they're in a little bit more realistic world. So they have found it really playable, both off the ground and off the tee. So that has been a nice, I think, piece of, you know, feedback. We kind of backed off on the face depth this year just a little bit. So it's still a nice deep face, but I think we were at 34 or 35 millimeters on 723, and we backed it down to like 33 millimeters. And again, those numbers might not mean anything, but then on our E fairway, we're at like 30 millimeters, 29 millimeters. That's what we would put a shallow face fairway would, you know, kind of that 30, which, you know, perhaps leads us right to E. So E, again, just like the driver, the E is kind of, you know, if you look down at the E versus the C, you'll see a lot more of the head on E. It's got a lot more confidence inspiring face, but it's a little bit shallower. So we kind of just designed this to be, you know, get you an extra degree and a half of launch. You know, we make the lofts. We've got a 16 and a half degree that's super popular in this 3-wood, just because, you know, there's just those people that are just looking for that little bit extra launch in there. And that's kind of, you know, where we designed that E fairway. Carbon crown, it's also got 3D diamond face. But it's not made from titanium. It's stainless steel with a stainless steel, high strength stainless steel face insert. But just great sound and feel. And we have had a couple of those in tour, in play on tour as well. So, you know, it's not, the C is not the only one.
It's interesting to me. Well, I have two pieces of feedback as I casually sit here and enjoy John's show and tell. I'm loving that 100%. But on the website, I'm looking at the fairways beside the hybrids, and there's some really impressive similarities between the two. And it's something that resonates from conversations I've had with golfers all throughout this year, which is, number one, should I play a hybrid or a fairway wood in this slot? And number two, why do they have to be so different? So I'm really curious, was a lot of thought put into that? Let's try and connect the dots between these two and really allow golfers to get creative rather than lean toward a design feature or a style that they prefer just because it's different?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's been really interesting in the last 3 or 4 years to see kind of what's happened to the hybrid. You know, so I'm a former Adams alum, so I'm hybrids to the bone. You know, that's what I was raised in golf on, was the hybrid. And so it's a little bit sad just to see the, you know, and just from sales numbers across the industry, like hybrids are really out of vogue. Like they really have lost popularity, because I think folks, we've been able to make our 5s and 7-woods almost as easy to hit out of, you know, tough lies as hybrids. So it's, you know, it almost comes down to a player preference standpoint. Like still, I personally cannot look at like a fairway wood with 20 degrees of loft. I have tried multiple times. So I'm a hybrid guy through and through. I play our C hybrid and our E hybrid in different spots. I play our C fairway wood, but I have just not been able to get. So I think a lot of it is really just making, you know, different options for folks that like, you know, I'm just not comfortable playing this 18 degree club at 43 inches or whatever the stock length is. I prefer my hybrid at 41 and a half at that, in that slot. It's just what I'm used to. You know, that's my personal preference. So I don't know, that maybe doesn't answer your question, but I think we've gotten where the performance on the two can be pretty similar as far as launch and spin goes, as well as the performance out of the turf. It kind of comes down to a preference thing of what you're really looking, what you like looking at.
Yeah. And I cut my teeth at Sonar Tech in the Kent. So you get,
yeah, you're
Kent versus Adams right here. So I'm also a hybrid guy, but I think the market trend has slowly creeped into my brain, and I'm my favorite club in the bag is the new E7257 wood. So,
and I think it's kind of it's almost forced us to rethink how we design fairway woods, that folks are looking to do different things with it than maybe they used to. Like, it's really trying to be that a club that you hit into greens more than just a tee club. So it has kind of, you know, the hybrid going slightly, you know, a little bit out of vogue, a little bit in the world, has kind of forced us to rethink how we market and sell and design our fairway woods. So,
yeah, I think in a roundabout way, you did answer the question, which just is a personal preference thing. I mean, we're seeing more of that activity out there, and you both mentioned you had a preference, but have slowly shifted to something a hair different than what you're used to. Now, I'm the guy, listen, I'm a long iron or utility guy. So you're talking 20 degrees and I'm salivating for the next 4 or 3 iron I get to hit. So, you know, it's getting kind of weird there, but I think it is a nice segue into the new irons, because we do have a new look here for the 725s. There are, I believe, 3 irons in the line.
Yep. Yes, there are 3 irons in the line. I'll let Clash continue to hand modeling. He's a pro at it, and I think he got a manicure. So
where do we start here? We go with C first.
Let's start with C and E. Talk about those a little bit. So, you know, the C and E, we've had those irons in the lineup for the last 3 years. So, you know, starting with C, we get really good feedback on C. We tweak it every year. It's a really nice, you know, we put it in that player's distance category. But each year we think it's going to do well on tour, but we just kind of immediately get the feedback that it's still a little too big. It's still a little bit too clunky. So this year we kind of just went back to the drawing board as far as the head design goes. And we basically shrunk the whole thing by about 10%. And this is the first year that kind of in our first go of showing it out on tour, we've got guys that are really interested in getting one of these sets in the bag once they're ready to be out there. So it's pretty late in the season, so none of the guys are really trying to change any equipment right now. But I think next year we're going to see a few of these sets in play. That C iron is kind of our super high tech iron. So it's got a cast body with a super high strength, miraging steel face that's welded on. And then it's all filled with our VibraCore material. So it's really nice sound, really nice feel, on that C iron, you know, and just, it is a really nice, player's distance, iron. Then we've got our E iron, and that's kind of our up the gut, game improvement iron. Now stepping a little bit forward to, we're introducing an X iron this year, which is our super game improvement. In the past, we've kind of tried to toe the line between super game improvement and, game improvement with our E iron. Introducing X kind of allowed us to go and refine the shaping and design of this E iron a little bit more. So it's still really forgiving. It's still quite, you know, it looks very forgiving. It looks very friendly. But we were able to make a couple tweaks to it, including, you know, making the sole thickness just a little bit thinner, the top line just a little bit thinner, just a little bit less offset to really give it like a nice look where it's not a game improvement iron that you're going to look at, you know, if you're a higher handicapper who still wants to look at something nice, you're not going to look down at this and be like, ooh, that's, you know, woof. It's actually a really nice, clean looking iron. So the E725 iron turned out really, really nice this year.
I love this. the new badge
too. Yeah, so we've got new badge. It's with carbon fiber and TPU in there. We call it a badge cap, so it kind of just goes on there. It gives the iron, it basically kind of makes it like a hollow iron. So really nice sound and feel. We fill it with VibraCore. We fill the sole up with VibraCore on that E-iron. So just really solid game improvement and player's distance iron. And then new to the category is our X725 iron.
My new iron set.
Yeah, Claff.
I'm the first human to put this into play. And it was so much fun to hit.
Yeah.
I could not get over it. Like, I can't wait to go out and play again because my new irons are just awesome to hit.
Yeah, I mean, it's maybe a little bit tough to see in the picture here, but this is the E iron and this is the X. And you can kind of just see looking at them face on that we kind of in this X iron, we're going for that like almost rectangular hockey stick type of shape. We've made it really shallow. So kind of similar to what we do with the rest of E, you know, it's all very shallow faces just to help encourage getting the center of gravity really low so we can increase that launch and spin. The top line's very thick on this guy. The sole's very wide. It's just a really easy and fun to hit iron. You know, we make the lofts a little bit higher than our E irons because we're not necessarily trying to win any distance battles with this product. We're just trying to get a product that the average golfer can hit and get up in the air. So I think this one's going to be a really nice seller and is going to surprise some people. And we just went for that super clean look so on it as well, so it wouldn't scare anybody.
Yep.
But I don't know.
C, E, and X. So we like to say around here internally, sex sells.
Well, let me give you my hot take here now that we've landed that one from Claffy. I'll tell you what, the C looks like a precision instrument. And then right beside the E, I mean, the E just looks angry. I kind of love it about it. Like, it just looks like you're going to pound the ball. I don't know if it's just the full black backing that you have. There was a very visual sole difference, or maybe it's on E as well, but on the X, there's this sort of triangular sole that's going on. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so we've got that in both. Okay. So from the actual sole standpoint, yeah, we've got kind of a rail going down the center. That just allowed us to remove a lot of the heel and toe turf interaction. It's kind of interesting because we're typically cascading technology that we use in exotics and then bringing it over to hot launch occasionally. This is kind of one case where we've taken a lot of our learnings from like Ironwoods in hot launch and actually brought them into our exotics line, where we do find that kind of adding this rail down the center really does help reduce turf interaction for heel and toe. So we just see a lot less digging, a lot less chunks kind of from the average golfer on this product. The other note, so yeah, I mean, kind of as far as the sole goes, if you look face on at this X driver, there is a lot of heel to toe camber. That's kind of that roundness that you see. So basically, you know, from center, we pull up this toe and this heel a little bit more. And again, that's kind of all just kind of trying to help us reduce the digging and turf interaction, particularly on that X product where, you know, we just see this as a super game improvement product. So you just have to accept that this person occasionally is going to hit 3-4 inches behind the ball. So we're just going to do the best we can to at least help. Yeah. At least help the ball advance. So, you know, that's kind of everything that we put into the X iron is just to make life a little bit easier.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't reinvent the wheel here. We took our best selling SKU of all time, the Ironwood from Hot Launch, and we've made an exotics version, an ultra premium version of an Ironwood. So it is super high MOI. It is super forgiving, super shallow face. It'll make you a better ball striker. It's made me a better ball striker. And like I said, it's just so much fun. I need to dial back a little bit because I was a club longer than what I'm used to. I was flying some greens.
Yeah, it is a very visual difference when you put it down. Like intentionally though, I think that it's a little bit less deep as compared to maybe the E, but mm-hmm. but I've seen that style of iron in the past, and I would say at the size you're working with, I think it makes a ton of sense. The goal there is being accomplished really well, and I'm really curious about them. I think they look super fun. I'm really impressed with the way C and E came out, and obviously X is is a new look that I think, as we've clearly heard from Claffy here, is a big benefit to those who are having a little bit of fun on either side of the golf ball.
Well, yeah, and you know, the big thing was is that it forced us to really throw C more into the player's distance category with that thinner top line, the thinner sole, because we really wanted that the perfect player's distance iron, the perfect game improvement, and the perfect super game. So we feel like we've got an exotics iron for every single player now.
Yeah, for sure. Introducing this X definitely allowed us to bring C and E a little bit, you know, we kind of towed the line between the categories. It allowed us to put C firmly into that player's distance category, and it allowed us to put E right in the middle of that game improvement category as far as looks, shape, size, and feel goes.
So, and we're super interested to see how it does in the marketplace.
Yeah, I was a huge champion of this X product. You know, I would say there were some questions along the way, but the performance has been really good. So I am super excited to see how well it does. So THP folks, go buy it so that it looks like a good decision.
Let me ask a super dangerous question.
That's the first time I've ever heard him make a sales pitch in my life.
That's my best effort at a sales pitch there. So
smiling the whole time for those listening. He was very excited to drop that at the end. But let me ask a super dangerous question here, and maybe you'll probably, you know, give me the answer I expect. But X in an iron line makes me wonder, have you been toying around with expanding E and C and other parts of your lineup to add an X for a more significant variety between?
Not in exotics.
Okay.
Yes.
Good enough. I mean, that's more the answer that I was expecting. I mean, we have prototypes of everything, Dan, obviously.
But I would say that for sure it is something that we talk about at almost every one of our product meetings.
Okay.
XN Hot Launch is X. So if that answers your question, it is something we consider. So stay tuned.
Yeah, I think that's great. I have one more question in terms of the entirety of the lineup. And I think when people consider exotics, their expectation is a very high quality experience just based on the name alone. What does that mean for the acoustics, the sound? I think everyone's looking for the best possible sounding product out there. I want to push that onto you, Matt, and maybe John, you have an opinion as well. How critical is that in the design features? You'd mentioned like different types of faces, testing. I assume each one of those materials and each one of those faces alter the sound. So where does that fall under the final product?
For sure. And to speak quite frankly, sound and acoustics is the biggest pain in the ass in my job. I shouldn't have said pain in the butt of my job, just because it is so subjective. And we do have great tools where we can predict and have a great ballpark idea as far as what we're trying to achieve from sound. So, you know, we basically, you know, do a recap on our 723 product and say, hey, what were the challenges? What were the problems? Did we like the sound? What could we tweak? So when we go into the next design cycle, we kind of have an idea of what we're trying to accomplish from a sound standpoint. So, you know, all right, E723 was a little bit too loud. Could we really dial that in? So we've got an idea what frequencies and durations we're trying to accomplish. So we'll do a lot of research as far as internal ribbing goes. So, and when we talk about ribs, I think we're calling these finned ribs in our marketing, but we've kind of got these things that go around the sole. We've got them here in the back, a little bit hard to see there. But we basically go through 5, 6, 7 physical iterations of those throughout the product cycle, because we will produce theoretical results for what these products might sound like. But ultimately, we kind of have to pick the best 4 or 5 in the theoretical world and bring them in and physically hit them. So it is really huge. And we'll go to the range and we'll have everybody there and we just have to listen. And you know, people will close their eyes and turn and say, which one do you think is the best? And of course, the most frustrating part for me is when we have 7 people out on the range and we get 7 different answers.
And that's how, it works, because it's so subjective.
But let me tack on that, John, just before you jump in there. I want to tack onto that as well. One thing I found really interesting this year, I happen to play with a group of golfers who have a pretty significant variety in swing speed. And each head, I feel like, has a different experience depending on the swing speed as well that you're using to apply to it. So, you know, what might sound great for one head from a slower swinger sounds horrible from a guy who swings it really hard because it's super loud, but I feel like you'd have to live in certain zones for each style of head, knowing the type of player that's going to play it as well.
For sure. And to even add to some more complexity on top of that is the sound inside versus outside. Like we will have very different sound opinions from when we go upstairs and we have like a big hitting bay where there's plenty of room around and a product will sound one way. Then we have a smaller hitting bay that's a little more of an echo chamber. The product will sound one way. Then we take the product outside and it sounds a completely different way. So it's really, you know, it's really kind of a management of all of those things. When we talk about sound, we have to swing the club at all speeds. To your exact point though, like we're not going out and trying to see, we're not that worried about how a C driver sounds when somebody swings 70 miles per hour. But if we're looking at an E hot launch driver that is kind of designed and for lower swing speeds, we're going out there and poking it at 60 miles per hour just to make sure that it, you know, sounds good. Because if you quiet a club too much at those low swing speeds, you know, it won't even like activate, I guess you might call it, where it really will sound totally dead. So now to answer your original question, and instead of me just lamenting about how much I hate sounding acoustics, we wanted to quiet these products down a little bit more. I think 723, both products were pretty good, particularly C. I think we had some feedback on E723 that it was a little bit too loud. It's one of those things that you don't notice until, you know, a lot of times you go play with somebody who's got an E driver. I'm like, oh, wow, that is a little bit too loud. This year's E725 driver, that was one of the first things we heard feedback on tour, was that this thing is like one of the best sounding drivers we've made. C's still really good as well, but I think the E725 driver sounds absolutely spectacular. So I think.
Yeah, I wanted to just compliment Matt and David and all the entire R&D team on where we landed with the sound, because I feel like we have found our unique signature in sound, because it's not too muted, it's not too loud, it's that kind of perfect in between. And I think we've actually surpassed some of the other the big boys with higher price tags in this arena because of it.
Yeah, I assumed, John, your perspective might be a hair different because it's not as finicky for you. You're more sort of dealing with it on the back end from a sound perspective. And it's one of those like final things that people experience before they decide, like, is this what I want to play with? And hear every time I go and play golf. Do you think your perspective aligns completely with what the guys are doing in the build room, or is it a hair different for you?
I spend a lot of time on tour as well. So, you go out there with something that doesn't sound right, you're not going to make any moves, no matter what the performance is.
Not even with hot melt.
You have to check every box with those guys.
Yeah.
And so I kind of take in that as well as, you know, the field and, you know, everybody's. And I feel like we nailed it.
Awesome. Well, I'll tell you what, we've got some good information already up on THP. It's super fun to have the chat with you guys, to hear really in depth where you've come with the lineup since the last iteration. It sounds like you're really excited about it, which means I'm excited about it, which is good.
You're going to have your club soon. We're waiting on JB to give us the list.
The big list, yeah. Guys, any final thoughts for THPers before we wrap it up today?
I'll let Matt finish with another sales pitch.
Oh, no, I've got nothing. Yeah, all I'll say is the THP is my favorite forum to go on after we launch a product, because the comments are all either very constructive or very kind. And not to say that I only want to hear positive feedback, but maybe some other places people can be just very rude. So that's just a thank you to all the THPers out there. I think that, you know, they're the most polite and kind and thoughtful, communicative. Yes, great community. So
pre-sales 10/15, shipping November 1.
Yeah, I'll echo that a little bit. And I think that the constructive perspective of THPers is great, because we have every type of golfer on there willing to try just about everything to find that perfect solution. Now, don't get me wrong, gentlemen, it doesn't mean they're done once they found it. We're psychopaths, no different than everyone else. We are the lunatic fringe. But you know, it's one of my favorite things to go and see the reaction as people go and hit it for themselves. It has become a very fun component of my day to day, is to see them react and to have you guys come in and react with us. So yeah,
it's one of the few places we can go on media launch day and go, look at this great feedback. Look how much there of it there is, because everybody's just so active.
Great. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much. And folks, if you're out there playing golf this weekend, have a great time. You can't get them this weekend. Well, you might be. I don't know when the show's going live, but go check out the new Tour Edge Exotics lineup. It looks really awesome. It sounds like there's a whole new product in X Series that John believes you should definitely go hit, and Matt believes you should definitely go buy. So we got a perfect pair here. Check it out for yourselves. Let us know what you think on the forum. We will have a conversation built around this podcast. So go and give us your direct feedback if you want to. I'll see you guys next week.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.